Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre. Well, football is back, sort of. You want to count that stuff that's happening right now in Canada's football. But we've got the big show tonight, the Football Hall of Infamy induction show class of 2022. You are listening live to Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Here with you live on a Thursday night, August the 4th, 2022. I'm Dre. He's Jay. I got Jay on late, so I have to check to see if he's actually there. Jay, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. Usually run into problems when I let you on after the show has started, but I was...
Yeah, that was cutting it pretty close tonight. You must have been deep in prep work.
Uh-huh. Deep as in getting something to drink in case my throat goes out. So, yeah. But, hey, everything has worked out well so far, so that's good. But, yeah, we are here. We've got our... formal wear once again on, and we're ready to do the pigskin version of our Hall of Fame / Hall of Infamy induction ceremonies. Last time we joined you, Jay did his baseball inductions and kept it relatively lighthearted. Not a lot of violence and drugs and all that stuff. None of that. Very straightforward. Still kept it entertaining, so good on him. I am taking a different turn tonight. I am getting extra dank and extra dark, and I kind of surprised myself by how far dark I was going. But, you know, there's some things we've overlooked over the years, and putting together our Hall of Infamy, there's some very, very infamous things that have happened, and I'm going to get to some of them tonight. That should have been in a while ago, and some, you know, relatively recent, and some stories none of you have ever heard of, I promise you. Some of the research that I was doing, looking up these stories, everything is going to be out there once the show is over. The post itself should be up because I had it timed to go up right now when the show started live. So for those of you who want to cheat and look ahead, it's there for you on our blog. There it is, 2022 Hall of Infamy Inductions, in much less detail, .blogspot.com. That's where you go to read our blog. When you're not reading our Hall of Infamy Inductions, you're going there to check on our football picks all season long when we start making actual picks again in a little over a month from now. So, Jay, you about ready to do this?
I am ready to go.
Oh, it's been something putting all this together.
Yeah, did you go back to the 1960s?
I didn't. You got the old timey stuff locked down. I couldn't go back that far. There's a lot of stuff that's happened that I'm aware of that I'm going to be putting in throughout the years, much more aware and much sooner than stuff that's happened before our time. I'm sure I'll sit down and go back and look up some incidents from the olden days. I'm sure there's a lot that's happened that I'm not aware of. It's just that I'm not aware of it, so I can't put it in. But the stuff that I'm aware of, I've got my list. I've been keeping up with. I'm all over it. I don't know how much I'm going to knock off of your list tonight. I'm thinking probably not very much. I think these stories are things that are unique to my sort of way of looking at things. I might be surprised. Maybe I do eliminate something off your list, but we'll find out. But yeah, this isn't for the weak at heart, folks. This is extra dark, extra dank. This is going to be a walk down the dark side. You know, Vice has their series, Dark Side of the Ring, Dark Side of Football. They do a very good job on that stuff, but they can't do everything, right? So, you know, that's where we come in. We got to fill in some of the cracks. So that's what I'm aiming to do tonight. I'm going extra dark side of the NFL in my Football Hall of Infamy Class of 2022 inductions. And I guess I'm about ready to get this thing going. So hopefully you all are settled in and ready to go and ready for what I got in store. I hope I don't disappoint. I'm going to start right off the bat, something that we've overlooked and something I think we should have found a way to slip this in years ago, but I'm going to do it tonight. We got to get right off on the right foot or the wrong foot or the really violent foot, as it turned out. Ladies and gentlemen, our first inductees into the Hall of Infamy, Hall of Fame / Hall of Infamy Class of 2022 NFL Division, Ron Goldman and Nicole Simpson. Yeah, we got to get these murder victims into the Hall of Infamy right damn now.
Yeah.
They are infamous.
You're not going to bring up like crime scene photos and stuff, are you?
I know I didn't go that far. The story itself is gruesome enough.
Yes, it is.
And I'm just going to tell the story as I have it written up on the blog. Ron Goldman and Nicole Simpson are infamous for being knifed to death by an NFL Hall of Famer. Allegedly. On June 12, 1994, the juice really was loose when O.J. Simpson, an all-time great Bills running back and C-list actor, is thought to have stabbed his ex-wife Nicole and a waiter, Ron Goldman, who was returning Nicole's mother's lost sunglasses to Nicole at her condo. O.J. is historically judged to have had a jealous streak and snapped in a rage of fury. He didn't pay for his actions at criminal trial, where he was found not guilty in what was called the trial of the century. However, Goldman's father, Fred, won a civil suit against O.J. for $33 million. The family also won the rights to the Simpson book, If I Did It, where he pretended to map out the murders as if he wasn't involved in them. There is simply no more infamous incident in NFL history. Simpson was a beloved public figure at the time of the murders. He had spent several years as a sideline reporter with NBC after concluding one of the most productive careers ever. The Heisman winner and number one overall pick out of Southern Cal, he was a 1973 league MVP when he gobbled up 2,003 rushing yards in 14 games. He racked up a number of acting roles during and after his playing days, including famous turns in the Naked Gun series of movies and as a Hertz car rental spokesman. OJ had the world on a string, but his jealousy consumed him and caused him to allegedly slice the bodies of his ex and the man he assumed was nailing his ex. The slow motion Ford Bronco car chase.
It was gay, by the way.
Ah, well, bad assumption on OJ's part.
Yeah.
The slow motion Ford Bronco car chase, the spectacle of a trial, the bloody glove, all of that. It's all part of a sordid story that lit up the country in the mid-90s. Everyone was talking about it, and everyone stopped what they were doing when the verdict was read midday on October 3rd, 1995, and he was found not guilty. It was the late Johnny Cochran, one of his lawyers, who declared, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. But for Goldman and Nicole, the saying maybe should have said, you will die in a haze, because O.J. was in a craze. The pair will live on in infamy as they probably have in the juice's dreams every night since. Ladies and gentlemen, the first inductees of the Hall of Infamy Class of 2022, Ronald Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't give them applause. Don't give them.
Well, our crowd is just as dank and dark as we are. So
yeah, the crowd was probably more like gasping, like, oh.
In horror, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was we have the crowd that was watching Will Smith slap Chris Rock. That was our crowd. There's so many characters you want to talk about from that whole OJ fiasco to the you know, you could have put in so many different things. Obviously, the victims are what we always forget about, right? Everybody remembers the trial and the Bronco and Al Cowlings and the If I Did It and all of those. But sometimes gets forgotten in this, sadly, is the fact that two people are dead, and O.J. is still looking for the killers.
Very, very much looking for the working very hard, diligently, still looking for those killers. Yeah. That thing just gripped the country when it happened. That whole spectacle, the whole thing was a mess from the get-go. The L.A. Police Department, that's a whole other spectacle and a whole other group of characters that basically fucked up the case and made it so that O.J. could walk free. There was a lot that was going on there, but just at the heart of it, it was a man that had a jealous rage and decided to murder his ex-wife and a guy that he thought was dating his ex-wife or sleeping with her or something. Like you said, that was not the case because the guy was not playing for that team. But yeah, as infamous as it gets, basically, was the whole OJ thing. You forget that even OJ was a Hall of Fame player. That's how much this is all overshadowed, as it should, really.
He was a great football player.
Yeah, as great as his career was, and it was great. No one talks about it anymore. No one, you don't see any football highlights of the Juice. You don't see they go out of their way when someone breaks like an OJ record to not mention OJ Simpson, but you kind of have to at that point. But other than that, they don't talk about him at all.
Yeah, he's the Benoit of.
Yeah, he really is.
He is the Benoit of football.
The star who shall not be mentioned. Yeah, that's a great call. He really is the Chris Benoit of the NFL. We're just going to pretend, except he's still going. He's still alive and still embarrassing himself every now and then. So yeah, that's how we get started, folks. I told you it's going to be dark.
Now, wait a minute.
Jumping off
that's,
the top
that's
rope.
How you, that's how you started.
That's how we start. It gets worse. It gets darker and it gets nastier.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's I'm telling you, I warned you people, I'm getting extra dark tonight. We're going to move on to our second inductee.
You know, you always talk about taking care of the mentals. Something I should know?
No, I'm just trying to really get to the people that deserve the real hell of infamy part of this.
You're going heavy on the infamy.
Really, really heavy. I got a long list of guys that have made their names in ways that they're not very proud of, and I think they deserve. I think they all deserve the spotlight that they're getting. And I'm gonna.
Oh yeah.
It's nothing about me. I'm not killing my wife or anybody anytime soon. At least I don't think I am.
We've already talked about in the past how our football Hall of Infamy, which is much more extensive because we've been doing it for so much longer, it's much more voluminous than our baseball one. And yeah, we have an entire. Crime and punishment wing in our football Hall of Infamy. So this is going to all kind of fit right in there. You walk in, you get the Law and Order, you know, playing. So yeah, you got a lot of that going this time.
Oh, the whole Axis of Evil. Absolutely. You know, it's been a long time coming for some of these people. They all. And we're going to move into our second inductee. Let's keep the killing going. Let's stay with the violence. Let's stay with the homicide wing where people are actually dying. Because, again, Hall of Infamy, if you kill someone, you absolutely deserve to be in a Hall of Infamy. And it's the NFL. Unfortunately, we have a lot of guys that have done a lot of killing. And one of them is tangentially tied to this year's Hall of Fame inductions. If you watched any of that proceeding tonight in Canton, they brought out this year's inductees, and it was a nice feel-good moment, and everybody got the fuzzies. And one of those guys out there was Dick Vermeil, former Rams Super Bowl-winning coach. And you're not going to hear any stories about this man when they go back and do the Dick Vermeil story and all the recapping of what made him a Hall of Famer, because he's got some guys in his past that maybe are not so Hall of Fame worthy, and this is right at the top of the list. Ladies and gentlemen, our second inductee into the Football Hall of Infamy class of 2022, Leonard Little. Jay remembers Leonard Little. I got a reaction. I got a pop out of Jay, so he remembers that one. Those of you who are not familiar with his story, Leonard Little, former defensive end for the Rams, infamous for, unlike OJ, actually being convicted of killing somebody. The Leonard Little story fits into one of my hard truths from our podcast earlier this summer, namely, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them the first time. The reason Little will never hear his name in Canton and thus finds himself enshrined here is because his brilliant career is bracketed by two drunk driving arrests. During his rookie year in St. Louis in 1998, Little demolished a woman who was on her way to pick up her son. He blew a .19 on the breathalyzer. He was sentenced to 1,000 hours of community service and suspended 8 games by the NFL. Little was nonetheless an impactful rotation player, and he was on the field for a Hall of Infamy moment when Kevin Dyson was tackled by Mike Jones 1 yard short of glory as the Rams beat the Titans in Super Bowl 34. Little put together 10 very productive years for the Rams starting in his third season, including a Pro Bowl and 2 seasons leading the league in forced fumbles. It would be foolish to suggest that St. Louis should have shown him the door after his manslaughter conviction. It wouldn't be foolish to say that the organization should have watched him a little better knowing his alcohol issues. Little got arrested again in 2004 for DWI. Despite smelling of booze and failing 3 sobriety tests and admitting he was drinking, somehow Little was acquitted of DWI but convicted of speeding. He also had charges the year before pressed by a girlfriend for stalking and harassment. It just goes to show that no matter how many people know you're a drunk and a bad guy, you can keep getting chance after chance as long as you're productive. Little was able to put together a fine career, but he won't be the star of any autograph sessions anytime soon. Our second inductee into the Hall of Infamy this year, Leonard Little.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, if he didn't want to be suspended so long by the NFL, he should have just sexually assaulted 25 women.
And counting. Those are the ones that sued him.
Those are the ones that complained.
Yeah, those ones actually said something.
We don't know about how many said yes.
I also don't know how many in shame just don't ever want to bring up his name and don't want to think about any of this ever again.
Yeah. Leonard Little, and you know, another a good player.
Yeah, really good.
He's a good player, but boy, you just want to talk about, you don't hear his name is really mm-mm. ever brought up. So.
Never.
Yeah. You're just sort of you are plumbing the depths. You are finding some stories. Yeah, I honestly remembered the name, but I didn't remember the circumstances.
Oh yeah, he was just driving along, drunk as hell, leaving a party, I believe, and destroyed a woman that was going to pick her son up from a concert. Just plowed right into her and killed her instantly. And
.19,
by the way, is like .11 more than the legal limit, I believe. So
yeah, .08, a lot of places.
Right, he was blitzed, so to speak.
Yeah, but we have plenty of stories of that. We got the one down in Miami. Was that Dante Stallworth?
I believe it was.
You know, and then last year we had Henry Ruggs. He was, I don't know if there was alcohol involved in that, but for the speeds that he was driving. But, yeah, boy, the NFL just keeps – it is the gift that always will give.
Apparently, it's a lot of guys out there that have murdered people. It's amazing. There's I don't think there's a whole lot of baseball players you can go through and go, yeah, oh, I remember that guy. He killed someone. I remember that other guy. He killed someone, too. There's not a lot of guys at NBA not a lot of people that kill other people. There seems to be a lot of those in the NFL.
Baseball is a little light on the murder, at least so far that we have found. But, you know, football's I think it has something to do with the violence of the sport.
Possibly.
And what it attracts, not like, the, you know, I'm saying, look, you know, people play Grand Theft Auto on their video game and they're going to go murder people. I'm saying it's just that it attracts, I think, a different type of individual.
Right. The type of person that would choose to slam his body into people for a living.
Right.
Probably has physicality issues and aggression issues.
Possibly. Plus then you mix that up with the what you call the roided up troglodytes, you know.
Oh,
I believe that was what you always called. Was that Clay Matthews?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of guys, and then you put that in the mix, and it is a strange brew, so to speak.
No doubt. I think you're onto something there. So, we got a lot to choose from. I'm plowing through these pretty fast too. We're gonna have a whole lot of time left at in the live portion, so we're already up to our third entry.
It's just so much so depressing.
I told you. I warned you. Extra dark. I'm going to get off the killing for a second. I'm going to just get icky. And this story, I don't know if you're aware of it, but we're going to go down a different road, but we're going to stay in the criminal element. And we're going to go back to prison, and we're going to go to actually a tie-in to the another tie-in to our Hall of Infamy. We had a play and a player from the Rams that you inducted the linebacker, right, Mike Jones? No, you inducted Kevin Dyson, the guy
right,
that got stopped.
Kevin Dyson was actually involved in two things between the Music City Miracle. And then being the guy who was tackled at the 1 yard line.
So there's an infamous career, and it doesn't involve any murders. So that's something.
No, it doesn't.
So this tie-in is where you brought in the first father-son duo as a combination entry.
And there was a criminal
the
element to that one. That was not good Hall of Fame.
Yes, there was. Well, I'll induct the second father and son. The father is already there due to the Jim Mora wing of quotes because of Dennis Green, who will always be known for. They are who we thought they were.
Yes.
And now it's time to bring on the sad saga that you may not be aware of his son. And our third Hall of Infamy class of 2022 inductee, Jeremy Green.
Yeah, that's right up there with Andy.
You know that
Green's
story?
Kid. I know it's bad.
Yeah, it is. Jeremy Green, of course, Dennis Green's son, former ESPN podcaster, infamous for being criminally cringe to the nth power. Speaking of someone showing us who they are, Jeremy Green had made a career out of hiding certain tendencies until sunlight shone on him and disinfected his whole world. Green, surely with some guidance from Pop, started his football life as a scout for several organizations, was named director of pro personnel for the Browns in the early 2000s, and then when Coach Butch Davis bounced, Green and other front office folks were dumped as well. Jeremy found himself writing for ESPN and became known to me as he hosted the early version, I think the earliest version of their first football podcast. He seemed knowledgeable and sharp, and I liked his passion for football. He had other passions, as it turned out. The podcast started being guest hosted by the producer and other random people in the summer of 2010, and if you didn't search out the details, you may not have known why, because they sure weren't saying a word about it on the show. In fact, his name was never mentioned. He's the Chris Benoit of the ESPN football podcast because his name was never, ever mentioned again after the things came out about Jeremy Green. All those sordid details became known. Green, despite being married with two children, decided to chat up a woman who he thought would bring her own children up to Bristol to have intimate relations. I don't even know how else to describe that. According to an arrest warrant, he shared pictures and videos of other children with the woman, not knowing that the woman was actually an undercover detective. This led to his arrest at a motel where police found him, a woman who wasn't his wife, a computer with loads of kiddie porn, an ESPN company computer, and oh yeah, why the hell not some cocaine. Green was dumped by ESPN, eventually pleaded guilty to the child porn, and served 3.5 years of a 5-year sentence. His father will always be associated with they are who we thought they were, but no one could have thought his son would be a Michael Jackson wannabe. Sometimes you just never know what you thought they were or something. My dismounts suck tonight. I apologize. That's our third NFL Hall of Infamy class of 22 inductee, the story of the disgusting Jeremy Green.
So let's see. We went from a double homicide. We went from like Law and Order, you know, and then we got the drunk driving, you know. Yeah, I don't know. That's not, you know, I don't know about that. Where that really falls in Law and Order, you know.
He went to jail. He didn't go to jail, but he
no,
got
I
arrested.
Mean, like, what spinoff of Law and Order that would be? Because this one's definitely the SVU.
That's definitely SVU.
Law and Order. Yeah. So. Yeah.
So yeah,
coach's kid hooked on Kitty. Yeah, so that's why I brought up Andy Reid's kid. You know. So yeah, so this yeah, you're not gonna hear about this guy. He's Jeremy Green is he's the Hunter Biden of the Green family.
Oh boy, the black sheep for sure.
Oh my God. So yeah, you know, and again, Denny Green, he's pretty much untouchable. Great coach, distinguished career. Yeah, really not a whole lot of bad things that we can say about Denny Green. But his spawn definitely putting himself very well. Where is Jeremy Green these days? He's still kicking, right?
That is a that's radio silence right there. I haven't heard a thing. I couldn't find a thing about him on the internet after he got released from jail. He is laying low, as they say.
Okay. You know, that's probably for the better.
Yes, definitely. There's definitely a situation where the least you hear about, or less you hear about the guy, the better, because that means he's presumably keeping his nose clean. Either that or he got much better at what he does. Hopefully that's not the case. Yeah, I can't remember the law. No, is it criminal intent? I was trying to think of the one with Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, that was criminal intent. So yeah, that was the one where you kind of already know who did it, but it's more about them kind of breaking it down. So you got a lot more of it from the like the criminal's perspective, and then the investigative. But not a bad show. But definitely didn't have the legs of the other two.
So that's the show. I think that's more like planned murders or planned crimes that weren't just kind of things that happened, like crashes, car crashes. That's the original Law and Order, is drunk driving crashes that just kind of happen. So yeah, the OJ one goes into criminal intent. Leonard Little goes into the regular. That would be Lenny Briscoe would be investigating Leonard Little there. And definitely Benson and Stabler would be all over Jeremy Green and his kiddie porn on SVU, no doubt. Yeah, we're covering all the angles.
Well, you know, and you're pulling stuff up out of the memory hole too. I mean, this is definitely, you know, this is definitely the realm of things we just don't want you to know. Like don't look over here.
Oh,
you don't see this. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Move along, folks. Nothing to see here. I didn't remember how much of the Jeremy Ring story you remember, because I definitely talked to you about it when it happened, because I was like, dude, you're not going to believe this.
It's one of those where it triggered for a real short period of time. This is, let's give the NFL credit and ESPN credit for how fast that disappeared.
Ooh. They covered that up real quick. They got rid of him, fired immediately, and never mentioned again. Like I said, the Benoit of NFL podcast.
Yeah, all guys so far are getting the Benoit treatment.
Yeah, you don't hear anything about Leonard Little ever. Yeah, that's true. And, of course, OJ.
Well, and every once in a while he gets mentioned. Just like you said, you can tell it's just so begrudgingly. Like, they don't – it's like, well – right up, we have to bring this up, you know.
So and so broke this rushing record set by this. Who's it? What's his name? OJ? Congratulations on breaking that record.
They
tried not to mention him ever on NFL broadcasts and shows and whatnot. And he's got a lot of records because he was a great damn player. But you never hear anything about the juice. Like I said, unless he goes and embarrasses himself and brings attention to himself, basically.
Which he was doing, you know, quite admirably after he got off, he got acquitted. Because that should have been his cue to just disappear into obscurity. But it wasn't. And then he finally ends up getting popped for that that thing in Las Vegas for the memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
Heist or whatever it was, where he goes and busts into the guy's hotel room and, you know, pretty much jacks him up because there was a disagreement over some memorabilia, and then that's what I believe finally got him put away.
Yes, he has been to jail. It's not for the murders at all.
No. So civil responsibility, and he's still looking for the killers.
Still. All right, moving on to our fourth thing that we are still staying dark, but we're getting off of the criminal element. I don't think there was any jail time involved here. This is still ick. We're staying with the ick, but we're getting out of prison. We're getting off the law and order for a second, and we're going to go to another man with ties to our Hall of Infamy, one of our earlier inductions, because.
Oh.
This man will now be a double inductee because into the Jim Moore wing of quotes, because he's very proud, I'm sure, of his guarantee. But he's not so proud of the night that he told the entire world, I want to kiss you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, good old drunk Broadway Joe. Boy, that was
Joe Namath has now, for a Hall of Famer, tangentially been put into the Hall of Infamy twice. That's hard to do.
Hey, when you're hot, you're hot. When the man knows how to get attention and how to make news, again, the first time, very proud of that, I'm sure. Second time, not so much. So a hearty congratulations to another NFL Hall of Famer, Joe Namath, who finds a way, like you said, into our Hall of Infamy twice. First person with two entries in the Jim Mora wing of quotes. On one side of the spectrum, he surely is very proud of his New York Jets Super Bowl guarantee. This is way over on the other side of the spectrum. On Monday night, December 20th, 2003, the Patriots visited the Jets on Monday Night Football, and ESPN sent sideline reporter Susie Colbert to interview Namath live during play. Joe was apparently about three bottles into the evening, and after slurring through some thoughts on quarterback Chad Pennington and the underwhelming Jets, he decided, you know, that's enough foreplay. Let's get down to business. And here now is Joe Namath, letting God and the world know how he felt about Susie Gold.
Joe, it's been a tough season for Jet fans. What does it mean to you now when the team is struggling?
I want to kiss you. I couldn't care less about the team struggling. What we know is we can improve. Chad missed, Chad Pennington, our quarterback, missed the first part of the season, and we struggled. We're looking to next season. We're looking to make a noise now, and I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Huge compliment.
Yeah, you know,
Joe Namath, part of the four-decade team. We'll see these guys at halftime.
All right. Thank you, Susie.
Joe's just a happy guy.
Isn't he?
He's just a happy guy.
Oh, boy, is he happy.
Oh, wow. Joe's just a happy guy.
Uh-huh. That's my favorite broadcast crew there, both of ours, putting the icing on that ick cake.
Yeah, is that the Mike Patrick, Joe Theismann, Al McGuire group?
Joe and Mike tried to chalk up Namath's come on to him just being a happy guy, and then Paul McGuire deadpanned, oh boy, is he happy.
Oh boy, is he happy, yeah.
Boy, howdy.
I don't care if, I mean, we always said the Jets, but, you know, it's truly the team. I don't care if this team is struggling. Oh, man. That's a funny one just because of how many times we have made reference to that.
Oh, everyone has. It's infamous. It really is.
I mean, that's good that you got that in. I like some of the AV work that we've gotten done here these last few shows, you know, with the pulling of quotes and such along those lines. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's always the best when you can go and find this stuff and actually present it the way it actually happened.
And you definitely get the sense of how in the bag Joe Namath was, even without seeing it.
Yeah, you can hear it. you can smell it coming through your computer screens and wherever you're listening to your favorite podcast. This is how ubiquitous Namath's quote is, by the way. My wife, I feel like I'm bored right now. My wife doesn't watch football, doesn't know much about it, doesn't care about it. But when Namath pops up on our TV as part of that Medicare coverage ad campaign that we've all seen, she responds, isn't he the drunk guy who was struggling?
Oh,
even she
no.
knows about that. This is the crying Jordan of the NFL. It's the moment that a man who was at the top of the sports world generations ago gets discovered and memed by the TikTok and YouTube generation who doesn't know anything about his playing days. Namath never imagined that he could top the fame from his guarantee, but on this fateful evening, he was no match for the unmistakable beauty of Susie Culber.
Well, that was, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah, 2003.
Yeah, almost 20 years ago, yeah. The sad thing is Susie looks the same.
Right, she hasn't really changed.
She's had some work.
She has a little work done. You know what? Yeah. So is Joe, so there you go.
Well, I don't want to say this to diminish the looks of Susie Culber, but Joe was, you know, looking through some beer goggles, too.
Good point.
Thank you. Here to bring clarity to the issue.
Yes, yeah, so he may have said, "I want to kiss you" to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I was about to go there.
You got to be careful who we disparage these days.
I was just about to go there. I'm looking at her in my mind, and so are you, but I'm not going to say her name.
There's so many options.
Yeah, I'll run far away from that before I get into it.
Also, to your point, that was the best broadcast crew that we've ever had.
Yeah.
Beyond underrated. Made me very sad when ESPN lost that Sunday Night Football contract because they broke up that group. And yeah, if it was a crap game, you knew it. If it was a bad officiating night, you knew it. But then they also could bring, you know, the good games, right? When there were really good games too, they stayed in it too, and I appreciate that. You know, it's not the Joe Buck. Have you ever watched any of the YouTube videos about all the awful Joe Buck calls?
No, because I've lived them.
How much lack of description he has on these plays. They show my favorite one is when they show him calling the Minnesota Miracle with the Stephon Diggs play up the sideline. The most minimalistic call to something that, I mean, I jumped off my couch when that happened.
Yeah.
And it was just, when you listen to the call, it's so boring. Like, how you can make that moment less. And that's what makes me miss those crews like that. You know, we don't have too many three-man booths anymore either because it's hard to do. Monday Night Football tried doing it for years and very rarely ever got the mix right, you know?
They tried just recently with Booger and Brian Greasy.
Well, but Booger was doing the weird driving up the sideline in his Booger Mobile or whatever the hell thing that was.
But it was still a three-man booth. He was just kind of out there like a ghost. Like
that was weird. That was weird. Or when they have these ones where, when they used to have, what's his name, Tony Siragusa, they'd have him down in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so weird, the things.
Talking about how big the guys are on the sideline. Well, yeah, they're football players. Thanks, Captain Obvious. R.I.P. lost him.
I'm just trying to figure out how that moment with Joe Namath hasn't made it in yet, because that is infamous.
Oh, my God. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows about I Want to Kiss You.
I Want to Kiss You. I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Struggling.
Everybody
knows
that.
You got to condense it down to just that.
Struggle.
That's all we need.
Struggling.
Struggling.
And the broadcast crew, I'm not going to go on and on.
You know, without just getting the audio, too, you've still got the visual of him, like, trying to lean in for a kiss.
Yeah.
Which is
basically
really
weird. He
tried
to lean in and kiss her before he even said the words.
Yeah, it was
just
so bizarre.
So ick. So ick.
Yes,
so,
ick.
So
ick
cringe,
is
as the kids say. Oh, very.
At least we never knew anything about Joe Namath's massage habits.
Joe, like all the other players that have probably gotten happy ending massages, knew about discretion.
Yes. Pick your choose wisely.
Knew how to get that shit done in privacy. Yeah,
find
the broadcast,
a favorite.
And stick with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go on and on about it, but we lost the great Vin Scully, of course, in the broadcast world.
Speaking of great broadcasting.
Right. And thinking about that crew of Theismann and McGuire and Mike Patrick, I think the one thing they had in common with Vin Scully, not trying to say that they're exactly the same, but I greatly enjoyed both of both their works. But Vin was by himself, and those guys were a threesome.
Which is just amazing, right? Think about that, that you can fill that much airtime and have it be dramatic and interesting, and you're basically doing the play-by-play and the color all by yourself.
And pulling anecdotes and stories and weaving it in. Like,
yeah.
You have to be an all-time great to even pull that off, to even convince someone to let you go on the air and try to pull that off. So, yeah, obviously Vin was a great, but the similarity, what they all have in common is they make the broadcast enjoyable for the person watching. It makes the person watching happy or happier that they're watching that particular broadcast, that particular
right.
version of it, because you can feel the joy and the happiness of the broadcaster through their work. And that's big time to me. I can't speak for every fan or everyone else that watches sports, but when the person calling the action is happy to be there and is really enjoying their work, it makes it much more enjoyable for me, the viewer or the listener. And that's what the Patrick
yeah.
and McGuire and Theismann did, because, like you said, when it was a great game to be watched, when it was one of those Steelers Ravens bloody 10-3 slugfest.
So, you know what? And they were right in that era when we were just starting to get those contests, those
yep.
9-6, like the best low scoring football you could ever watch. And they
yeah.
enhanced it.
Exactly. They were right in there, and they gave you all the details and all the excitement, and they let
yeah.
you know what was going to happen before. We've got to watch what Troy Polamalu is about to do right there, and then there he is just lighting somebody up. So they gave you the enjoyment of the telecast. They gave you the joy of the game, and they also prepared you and made you smarter for watching as well.
Yeah.
And that's another big part of it as well. And then when things like the Joe Namath thing happened, they could get...
Joe's just a happy guy.
Isn't he?
He's just a happy guy.
Oh, boy, is he happy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, is he happy.
They can give you that.
Oh, man, he knew. He knew.
Oh.
They all knew.
They all knew, but Paul was the one that said it
yeah.
in so many words, which was
which is funny because we talk about them and we talk about Vin Scully passing, and we think about what we talked about last week, is there's a drive into deep left field by Castellanos, and that'll be a home run.
So yeah, there's that end of the spectrum, and then there's Thom and Joe Buck and that whole
yeah.
end of the spectrum where. That does not sound happy. When those guys
yeah.
are calling the action, they don't sound like they're enjoying it. So that's
I don't want to talk about it. We'll fill a few minutes here because we still got 17 minutes for your last one. But,
right.
This era, it's over of these broadcasters who brought interest and personality and could really infuse something into the broadcast. Everybody now is so milquetoast and canned-sounding. And then mercenary. So these guys are all jumping from team to team to team. And, and very, very few, other than guys who have a shtick, shtick isn't entertainment, right? I'm up here in Wisconsin, so we've got Wayne Larrivee, who the Bears had for many years, too. But Wayne is shtick.
Yeah, two-yard gain.
Yeah, yeah. There is your dagger. Oh, God. Okay. It's exciting if you're a fan of the team, maybe, but it's shtick.
He's professional, at least. He actually knows
yes.
what he's doing in between the shtick.
He is a good broadcaster, and when we had him down in Chicago, he would call Bears games. He would fill in on GN for Cub games all the time. He never embarrassed himself.
Yeah. He's good at what he does, but yeah, like you're saying, he's got a thing that he does, and he's trying to
right.
get himself over is what it's called in pro wrestling parlance. When you you know, make sure you get your shit in, make sure you get your line in, and make sure everyone knows who's broadcasting this thing.
He's getting himself over.
Yeah. They're waiting on him to say that thing, that thing you do. I hope it's not over. I know you bring up great points and correct points that all the new guys that come out are all the same, and they all sound the same, and they're all trying to sound the same, and they're all trying to not be controversial so that they can keep their jobs. I get that, but goddamn, you got to have somebody break out and have some color, some spirit to them. I know if I ever got the opportunity, I would be extremely professional. I would make sure nobody could ever see through my stuff. I would have absolutely every note you could think of, and you know, I wouldn't try to fit them all in, but I would be 100% extra prepared. But I would also have to, I guess, get my shit in. What I would call it was just putting my own flavor on it. You got to distinguish. You got to make yourself distinguishable somehow. Otherwise, how does anyone know who you are? Like, they could be all the same guy. And like you said, they go around in a merry-go-round as it is, changing jobs and going from city to city, and you don't know one from the other because they all sound exactly the same, and that just sucks.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound horribly sexist here, but that is, to me, the problem with the female play-by-play callers.
Hmm.
They all sound the same.
They do. Same rules apply to them. You can be professional and get all your stuff in, but you also got to do something to distinguish yourself.
But they've all got that manufactured voice, and you can hear it right now. You can hear it. It's manufactured excitement and manufactured everything, and it just and they're also, it's cookie cutter, and there's no personality, and it drives me crazy when I hear the over, almost like phony enthusiasm. Not that the guys don't have that too.
No, it's exactly the same thing. It's all of them, man or woman. Show me that you enjoy what you're doing for 1 second, please. Put some flavor in it to distinguish who you are, so that we don't think you're all the exact same person. And do something to make it sound like you actually are glad to be there and you understand the privilege of the position that you have. Because right now, you're right. They all sound exactly the same. They all sound exactly like they're just trying to keep their job.
Or they're trying too hard, I believe is the word I would use. It's a little much. Like, okay, I get it. I see what you're doing. But you're so indistinguishable from everybody else that's doing what you're doing right now. I couldn't name you one by name, female play-by-play caller.
Oh, God. This is going to sound horribly sexist by me, too. I know there are several different ones.
But right, there's multiple.
The point is, when they call the game, I think it's one, and then they show the face, and it's the other one.
Oh, it's the other one. Okay, oops. All right. All right. Our misogyny minute is over.
Oh, it's not Pam Ward. It's the other. Oh, okay.
Oh, no. Well, Pam Ward, I mean, she was the mascot of awful announcing for years.
Yeah.
For that block, which is still kind of around, but not what it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but they do all kind of. Yeah, we just totally went Kings of Non Sequitur off on a broadcasting tangent. Which is fine, because, like you said, we got so much time to
fill. I'm helping you with the airtime. I'm watching the time, so, you know.
Yeah, because I'm just plowing through these inductions. I got one more to go here.
All right.
So let's knock that out, and you've kind of alluded to it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Because we've talked about a little bit about Deshaun Watson. You're going to get to him in the after show. You had some comments. I know you want to get to that whole situation, and, of course, I got thoughts on it as well. Deshaun will have his day. That whole situation will absolutely have its day because it's extremely infamous, but it's still in progress. We still don't have any idea how it's going to turn out.
It's on its way to being an instant classic.
It really is. Once it actually finally gets resolved. However, we've got another situation of somebody who had the means to do things discreetly and just chose not to. And wound up embarrassing himself and everybody around him. I'm not going to induct the he might be in the Hall of Fame already, but he probably will be one day. Very legendary 7 championship rings owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft. I'm not inducting him. Instead, I'm inducting Orchids of Asia Day Spa.
Yeah. Very deserving. Very deserving.
We've got all sorts of entities in the Hall of Infamy. We've got people, places, things, ghosts, animals. We've got all sorts of things. We've got a building now. We've got the actual day spa. I don't know if the building itself is still standing. I know the spa is permanently closed. I found that out in my research.
Well, they lost their best client.
The Orchids of Asia Day Spa in, I believe, Jupiter, Florida, is infamous for giving an NFL owner the happy ending Deshaun Watson praised for every single night. The saga of Patriots owner Robert Kraft's rub and tug is infamous and embarrassing for the same reason Watson's tale is, because men with the financial means to buy women should focus on buying those who want to be bought and who provide the utmost indiscretion. Kraft is worth more than $8 billion, that's a B, according to Forbes. So the thought of him showing up at a $59 day spa in Palm Beach County, Florida on January 19, 2019.
Come on! He likes it dirty.
It's baffling. That's not a number I made up, by the way. The massage costs $59. That's not, I didn't pull that out of my ass. That's actually what
it's like
it costs.
Like an oil change.
For a half hour, $79 for an hour. $8 billion. What the hell? The spa had a rep for happy endings, but law enforcement caught on and set up a surveillance sting, and old Bob got caught getting a hand job during one visit and a blow job during another.
Well, you know, Kraft, when you go, I tell you what, when it's only $59 and $79, leaves you plenty of room to leave a tip, if you get what I mean.
I see what you did there. Kraft had chosen the wrong joint to go slumming in. Luckily for him, he's filthy rich. So, like OJ, he enlisted a murderer's row of attorneys who had no other objective but to get their client off. The women and their madams were caught. You see what I did there. The women and the madams were caught in the prison system as they battled their charges. They mostly didn't have the means to post bail. Kraft posted bail, avoided the perp walk, pled not guilty to solicitation. His lawyers got the video evidence thrown out on technicalities, and in September 2020, the charges were dropped due to lack of evidence. Funny how that worked. All the videos were ordered to be destroyed last year. No harm, no foul, right? Except we will immortalize and remember Robert Kraft for managing to get wrapped up in a sex scandal that could easily have been avoided had he used some of those billions for outcall. It's called outcall, dude.
Man.
It's up to you. There's no video. There's no police. They come to you. You don't have to worry about Orchids of Asia Day Spa, my final entry into this very dark, dank Hall of Infamy class of 2022.
Yeah. You know what Bob Kraft needed?
A lot
Jeffrey
of
Epstein.
But...
He needed some Jeffrey Epstein. That's what he needed.
Oh, yeah, he needed a Ghislaine Maxwell in his life, right?
Yeah.
Somebody to sort of guide him the right way instead of down the wrong path.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
There is an excellent story in Vanity Fair with a lot more details by a lady that actually went down there to the community and did some legwork and interview. Apparently, like, he... was with a friend. A friend drove him to he was trying to go to a hotel to get a massage, and it was not available. I don't know if they were closed or what, but a friend of his said, "Hey, I know a place," and drove him to the other side of the tracks, to the dirty side of Palm Beach County.
See, they had to throw out the evidence because it was all swallowed.
Even. Don't even know where to go with that one.
But we can keep the tapes, right? We can put the evidence in. We can have that playing on a repeating loop in the Hall of Infamy.
I wish we could. When I say the tapes were destroyed, I mean like a judge ordered them destroyed last year. So
telling me nobody's got a copy? Come on.
That would not be surprising. That just because you destroy all these tapes doesn't mean somebody somewhere doesn't have something stored away for a rainy day.
Think about how much crap the Patriots, to be squeaky clean, how much crap they have been exposed to between that and Deflategate and the taping of practices illegally and Aaron Hernandez and the Patriots. Oh, my God, Tommy. Oh, jeez. This makes you sick.
Did you see the meme on Twitter somewhere or on social media about now with the first-round pick getting taken away from the Dolphins, surprising piece of news, which coincidentally came out the day after the Deshaun Watson ruling.
And you want to talk you want to talk about deflecting all of that hate and anger. Deshaun Watson owes Stephen Ross a big solid.
Or Roger Goodell, who decided to make that ruling the day after the Deshaun Watson ruling.
Yeah.
Coincidental.
Uh-huh. Like this whole Deshaun, well, the NFL is appealing that, so this Deshaun Watson thing ain't over yet.
Oh, definitely not.
This is far from over.
But the meme pointed out that there's only been three incidents disturbing enough in NFL history for draft picks to be taken away as part of the punishment. You mentioned two of them, the
Deflategate
and
then the taping
and the videotaping of practice.
Video, yeah. Oh God, Spygate.
Mm-hmm. And now with this, for Stephen Ross tampering and trying to get Tom Brady down to Miami, which means that Tom Brady is involved in all three of the times
in every
that
single one
involved.
Of them. Yeah, it's not going to be on his house in Canton, but you know what? We'll remember.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. We got, man, that's the thing. We catch up on all the things that should have been in, but there's more. There's more being created. There's more.
The Football Hall of Infamy, if this was our full-time job and we had support and we had people, we would have decades of material waiting to go into the hall. And then the problem is there's new stuff all the time that supplants that stuff. I can't tell you how many times I have had, like, I was pretty sure what was going to go in. I'm sure if I look at my phone right now at my Hall of Infamy for football for next year, I've got enough to go in right now. Things will happen between now and then, or I'll see something, you know, or it's just your memory gets jogged. And how many times we just are bumping things out of the way to make room for all the recent stuff. Like, we know we are living through Hall of Infamy level stuff all the time in football.
Definitely. I there's so many guys and incidents on my notepad here, which is just the back of an envelope, but that have
I keep mine in my phone.
That's
my one bit of organization is my
more modern
my
than I am.
Yeah, so I've got my, like, so for baseball, seriously, I have already got 5 in my phone. So I had 10 already ready to go when I did baseball this year, which is just crazy. And if I go, you know, start looking for my football Hall of Infamy, which is funny because I'm always updating these. And changing the, I've already got 2023 Hall of Infamy candidates, 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got 6 already in here for next year. And I'm sure I'll find more.
Yeah, if you just wait a minute. There's more coming. Every time you look up, something else is happening.
I got to tell you, though, looking at my list is not as dark.
Oh, good. We need that balance. We can't be all dark all the time. That would not be... that would be too consistent.
Right.
We need some lightening up. But yeah, if anybody wants to pay us to be the TMZ of football, we're absolutely open for business in much less detail at gmail.com. If you want to drop us a note anytime for any reason.
I guarantee you do any of that. You look at any of that dark side of football stuff and our Hall of Infamy has way more.
Way more and some crossover too. It's funny to look at some of those things when they were doing a they were doing a show about diva wide receivers, and they were talking about Terrell Owens, and I'm like, oh, come on, we got that covered so big time. We covered all the tools of T.O. We did that years ago. Come on, man. Yeah, we could probably collaborate with them and really help them out and give them some ideas that maybe they don't even know about. But yeah, they can't do it all. Well, thank you. I feel like I had a lot to live up to. I was hyping it and making everyone realize, hey, it's going. I even told people at work, man, I'm going dumb tonight. I'm going dark and dumb, and it's going to be crazy. And I hope I came through. I hope everybody that tuned in to get the extra dark version of the Hall of Infamy induction got everything that they could want and more and learn some things. I'm sure a whole lot of people don't know about that Jeremy Green story. I'm glad to have enlightened them on some of that. That's the, you know, the point of the Hall of Infamy is to educate, to inform you about things that you probably won't ever know about or would not ever learn about. So we entertain, but we also want to inform. That's the key. That's the goal. And then hopefully I did that tonight.
That was a crazy list.
And that's just the five that I picked off this year. Because there's more. Like you said, there's always more. The most recent is the is Robert Kraft, but that's not, you know, last year or whatever. That's several years ago. So you know, I really went back for those other ones, you know, the OJ and the Jeremy Green thing is a decade ago and whatnot. There's still out there. There's still plenty of stories out there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do my work and find something dark for next year.
So you definitely had thoughts on the Deshaun Watson decision, which, as we know, is just the beginning of the story.
Well, just how ridiculous, you know, Twitter exploded.
And Twitter explodes.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of those where I understood it because you had the posts and they were so accurate about it. I get that the NFL is going to have its punishment and it's going to punish players and do things, and I understand it, but how uneven the application of justice is in the NFL. But we think it's bad in our criminal, like regular criminal justice system. Like, you see the stuff that players are getting suspended for or kicked out of the league for, you know, and what Deshaun Watson has done. I mean, obviously this is not murder, but murder, yeah, players who commit murder typically don't come back to the NFL, you know. But in this case, this is so egregious. And it's just, especially with the Me Too and all this stuff. And you have a guy, Ray Rice hits his girlfriend and he's gone. He was pretty much, he came back, but he was never, it was done, right? I mean, the current poster child of all of this is Calvin Ridley, who I'm sure you've seen all the comparisons to and posts about, who apparently gambled while he was hurt on a game for the team he played for to win a game. And he's indefinitely suspended from the NFL.
Yep, for $1,500 of gambling.
For a $1,500 bet. Can't play football anymore. And Deshaun Watson, who sexually assaults or allegedly gets 25 complaints. Yes, I don't care if you settled them. That don't mean anything. Settling the dispute doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means you settled the dispute. And in fact, and usually that's sometimes more of an admission that something happened than it didn't.
Yeah, most innocent people don't settle lawsuits against them.
Yes, not 20 of them. And there are still ongoing litigation, and there's probably still going to be more complaints. So the six games to me seemed just ridiculously low. And I know it was arbitrated and it was coming from a sort of a quote-unquote independent person in this case who obviously hasn't looked at any of the precedent in the NFL for what suspension should be.
Yeah, except her written part about it made it seem like it was this terrible stuff and so egregious, and the written decision didn't really match up with decision itself, because she talked about how it was such a stain and was one of the most, you know, vile things done in the NFL, but because it wasn't violently sexual, whatever that means, then that was sort of her way of splitting hairs and getting on the side of, hey, I had to come down on them hard, but I didn't come down that hard because at least it wasn't violent or something. It was just, it was bizarre. The whole thing was bizarre. And maybe the most bizarre part of it is I wasn't aware of the appeal process, which basically is Roger Goodell or someone that Roger Goodell appoints is the appeal. And it's like, well, so how did this fit? That feels like another thing that the players union thought that they won in the collective bargaining agreement, and it actually didn't really amount to any kind of victory, because they go, oh, we made it where Roger Goodell isn't the guy that's making all these decisions. We're going to get it to this third party, and they're going to make the decision. And then you find out, oh, wait, if the NFL doesn't like the decision, they can just appeal and Roger Goodell can make the decision anyway. Oh, fuck. Well,
yeah. So it's like, at that point, what's the whole point? If you're, is it just to say, well, we tried it your way.
And we got a third party. So we made sure that it wasn't all Roger Goodell. We made sure that it wasn't just his decision. We got it to where somebody else is going to step in. That's supposed to be not involved with the NFL and is going to make that decision. But if Roger Goodell doesn't like the decision, he can just appeal and say, okay, I'll take it from here. So it's like, well, everyone seems to be of the, all the NFL experts that I follow on Twitter and people that I read seem to all be in agreement that this appeal is going to result in Deshaun Watson not being suspended 6 games. He's getting a lot more than 6 games, and he's also going to get fined because this lady talking about the most vile, egregious thing that you could think of in the NFL also didn't fine him at all. And it's like, okay. So yeah, they're gonna get some money from him. They're gonna suspend him more than 6 games. How much more? Who knows? But I don't know if they're gonna do the whole year. But and Goodell, you know, did a good job. He set it up so that he's not the one doing the appeal. He, you know, farmed it out to somebody else, some other judge. So it's gonna look like Goodell is, again, not part of the process, but this is Goodell's handpicked guy, so obviously he's going to be doing what Goodell wants him to do. The whole process was strange. The whole thing was weird. The fact that it got to this point and it took this long, and training camp is underway and preseason football is starting, and we're still not, this still isn't resolved. We thought this was going to be cleaned up. I shouldn't speak for you. I thought this was going to be cleaned up and completely resolved by now, by the time we started training camp and started playing preseason games, because otherwise you're asking a team, as you know, as much as the Browns are getting bagged down for making this move, and you can argue how not smart it was, it's still kind of unfair for them to still be sitting around going, well, how long is our guy going to be out, and who's our starting quarterback, and how many reps should we really be getting for Jack Brisket, and should we be looking for a third guy out there? Should we, you know, all these things, all these questions that are unanswered and unresolved because of this, just a bizarre way to handle this, the whole appeal process and all of that. It's odd, but the whole thing is odd, I guess. You know, the fact that he couldn't stop going to all these women trying to get happy endings is extremely odd. I guess that's the my point is, don't ever lose sight and lose track of why all of this is happening. Is all because Deshaun Watson has a fucking problem and won't admit it, and that's why we're all going through all this right now.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's a lot of, you can go through a lot of, obviously you don't want to try to, you know, psychoanalyze it, but I think there's that mentality of being invincible, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the entitled athlete, right? You can do whatever you want, get away with it, and apparently he was Deshaun Watson. He's a millionaire. He must have just expected these women would be just falling over themselves to lend him a hand, so, you know, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, him and Robert Kraft, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, very timely. Putting in the Robert Kraft one, just on its similarities to the Deshaun Watson thing. And
out call, dude. You don't have to do that.
Games, though, that's what just blows me away.
Yeah, blew everybody. Just from what I was reading, it seemed like the lady, and I should Google and get her actual name, but I don't really care that much. But that she was trying. This is the first time that they've used her. So she was trying to straddle that line. She didn't want to come down too hard on the player because she didn't want to seem like, oh, this is, you know, just another Roger Goodell clone coming in and slamming the hammer and killing the players all the time. So she wanted to not do that, but she also didn't want to be lenient because of the fact that of what he did and how disgusting it was. And like I said, reading her statement about it, she seemed to know and acknowledge how horrible and disgusting his actions were, and then gave him 6 games. It didn't match up. Didn't make sense.
No, not at all. Maybe you feel like you're sort of off the hook too, just knowing how backwards this appeals process is. Just that you know that pretty much Roger can get Goodell can step in any time and go, nah.
Yep, I didn't like that. Not enough games. We're going to appeal
games?
That.
No, we're just going to make it a whole year.
Or whatever this third-party person that he assigned is going to wind up making.
Right.
Might be a whole year. I don't know. We're in the holding pattern. We're waiting.
I was in the camp that would have been completely okay with an entire season. Just knowing.
Yeah, me too.
What the other results have been, what other players have been basically kicked out of the league for.
Right.
Oh, God, who's the weed guy who just can't stay in the league?
Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon did not sexually accost 25 women, allegedly, you know.
That we know
Josh
of.
Gordon smoked a little happy weed, you know. Which in many states is legal. What he did is legal in many states. I don't think what Deshaun Watson did is legal in any state.
No.
Okay. Just throwing that out there.
I'm no lawyer, but I don't believe it is.
Yeah,
either.
And I also don't believe that weed is a performance-enhancing drug. I don't think that's going to help you play better.
Who knows? They didn't suspend him for performance-enhancing weed. They suspended him because
that's what I mean. How many, like, the weed guys, right? Remember, wasn't Warren Sapp a weed guy, remember, before the draft?
Right, that's why he fell to the Bucks.
Or Laremy Tunsil with the gas mask. I don't know what he was. I don't know what the hell you're doing. I don't know.
He's not trying to smoke it. He's trying to just, like, swallow all of it. I don't know.
I guess.
I've never tried it, so I can't speak to it. I don't know. You're right. It wasn't about enhancing his performance. The only reason I hesitate is because maybe it could be kind of performance enhancing. Like, if you're really nervous before games, you hit a little weed. Maybe that calms you down. Maybe you play better. Who knows?
I don't know. But you would have expected that with all of the things that have happened in the past and just how bad this whole Deshaun Watson thing has been, I would have expected this ruling to be precedent-setting.
Yeah, me too.
What's the deterrent here? We talked about this a few shows ago. Like, how many women was too many? Obviously, one.
Right.
But at which point, right, so if Deshaun Watson had only had this happen one time, this would still be a big story, right?
Definitely.
And he would have been suspended. By these standards, what will you do? It's like, will you get suspended for the first drive for one woman now?
He served his punishment. Now here he comes on the second drive.
You can't play the first quarter of a preseason game, Deshaun. That's what I mean. That this is almost precedent setting in the wrong direction.
Well, even before this weird-ass ruling, I talked about when the Browns made the deal and gave him all his money guarantee.
Yeah.
How disgusting was that? That's precedent setting too. Like, oh, you did what down there in Houston? Oh, that's awful. You're an upgrade over our number one overall pick, though, so we're going to move heaven and earth and bring you up here and everything's
going to be. No, that was, you know, Deshaun, there was already going to be this prefabricated outrage no matter where he went, right?
Sure.
Every city that was talking about being in on Deshaun Watson already had all those articles written. All the national media already had all the articles written just with a blank with the name of the team.
How could so-and-so bring
Correct.
Deshaun Watson
so,
to their city?
So there is already going to be this whole outrage factory for the Deshaun Watson signing. How the But then the Browns just completely did the, oh, yeah, watch this, hold my beer NFL, by giving
right.
him all that guaranteed money. So
just
then that
lost
took
their money.
Right. So then they just outdid themselves with this whole out. So, I mean, even people in Cleveland, nobody wants anything to do with this guy now.
Well, that's
and some of it's his
not
fault.
Entirely
well,
true
okay,
too.
90% of it is his fault. 10% of it is now the fault of the team who gave him a ridiculous amount of money for no reason and guaranteed it all.
The Haslams are getting what they deserve when they anytime
Correct.
They get bashed in public for what they did. They're getting what they deserve. They're doubling down because they keep releasing statements saying how sorry Deshaun Watson is for what he did, even as Deshaun Watson turns around and said, by the way, I still didn't do what they said I did. So obviously they're just covering his ass and trying to protect their asset. But it's still not true that everybody is in Cleveland is coming down on Deshaun Watson and doesn't want anything to do with him because they're lining up and getting his autograph at practice. They're cheering him when he comes out on the field for training camp. As I said, at the end of the day, no matter how disgusted how, you know, a certain percentage of the fan base might be with Cleveland, if he throws touchdown passes and lead them to the playoffs, it's going to be a large stadium full of people cheering and going crazy. Because
yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as universally accepted. I still think that there's going to be, especially all the opponents, right? Anywhere he's not going to travel well. I can tell you that.
Right.
But I don't know how, I obviously am not in touch with the sports media or the fan base in Cleveland, but I think we'll get that as it goes on. What I'm not looking forward to is this week six thing holds where he's, you know, suspended six games is when we get to the week seven game where he's about to start and we get the sit down with him and one of the, whoever's calling the game that week. And it's, I'm not watching.
I don't know if he's got the balls to do that. I don't know
well,
if he's going
to
sit down with anybody.
It's going to probably be mandated by the team that he has to go on this rehabilitation tour, right?
The Browns aren't going to make him do anything. I think the Browns have proven and the Haslams have proven that he can do anything he wants to do, and they're fine with it. If he never speaks to the media again the rest of the year, the Haslams are going to cover his ass and be okay with it. And they're going to make it seem like he needs his mental space. He needs his mental health, and we need everybody to respect his privacy at this difficult time. That's what they're going to do for him.
Yeah. Man.
But no, I'm convinced
that. Who's the guy who keeps getting the dildos thrown at him?
What? The dildos thrown at him?
You didn't see that in the playoffs last year?
In Buffalo?
Yeah, when that guy scored the touchdown, and they threw the dildo into the end zone, and then they actually went back through and they found out that this same guy, I think, has had three of them thrown at him.
Really? Oh,
part
I didn't know.
I don't. Hang on. I better beat you. I don't want to. I might have to find a prop for the Hall of Infamy.
I did not read enough into the story. I didn't know that was a serial dildo.
Yes, it's happened multiple times, and it's all been to the same guy. So watch out, Hall of Infamy.
There's clearly a story behind that.
There's clearly something going on there. There's a serial dildoing going on with this player, this thing going on. But the best is that screen cap of it, though, as it's on Nickelodeon. Right?
Mommy?
It's on Nickelodeon, I believe.
What is
or
that?
Was that on Nickelodeon? Was that the Nickelodeon game?
I don't remember. Oh, my God.
I don't remember exactly. I do remember making a joke about who the sponsor would have had to have been for what would have been shooting in the end zone instead of the slime.
Oh.
Remember making that joke on Twitter.
Yes.
That might not have been the Nickelodeon game. I think I'm conflating that with my joke.
Oh. I remember the game. It was the Patriots game. It was Saturday night. I picked the Patriots.
That was not the Nickelodeon one, right.
It was one of the worst picks I've ever made because they had no chance in that game.
COVID saved you this last season. I wasn't able to change my picks because I was sick with COVID, which sucked because once it looked like it was all over, I think you lost every pick.
Just about, yeah. I won the Super Bowl.
I can't remember if you won the Super Bowl pick or not. I think you might have won that one.
I did. I thought it was going to be a field goal game, and that's what it was.
Four? Was it four? Or?
Three and a half, four, yeah.
Yeah, it was close. But we're getting to football now. This is fun. I did not watch a second of that game tonight. I don't care.
I didn't watch a second either. I'm about them introducing the players because I read it on Twitter.
I'm excited that we're taking our kids to a game this year. You know, we're taking the kids to their first game at Lambeau, which is just a cool place. I mean, it is football. It's like one of the meccas of football, right?
Really,
nobody
throws a dildo up there.
I'm hoping there's no dildos thrown. But, yeah, my kids get to see a preseason game, but I don't think they're excited to go to a football game, real
sure.
NFL game. They're not going to care that it doesn't count.
Right.
You know, they might care in 10 years. You know, I particularly myself don't care all that much about going to preseason games. I do remember the last preseason game I went to. I went to it with my wife. I don't even know if we were married at the time. And Aaron Rodgers, I think he threw four touchdowns in the first half against Buffalo in a preseason game up here. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching that and I'm going, yep, he's my number one pick in fantasy this year.
Man, he's been there that long. It might have even preceded your marriage, which is 11 years old now.
Pretty damn close to it because he's been their quarterback since 2008, 2007, right around there.
Wow. Keep forgetting how old
he took over as soon as Favre left.
Right, but he didn't immediately get the job. He sat in. He studied for 2 years or whatever.
Right, but once Favre left town, though, once Favre actually left, it was Rodgers' job the whole time.
Right.
They went straight from Favre to Rodgers. And I remember Rodgers, before he got the job, I remember watching him in some preseason action thinking he was just absolute garbage. His first preseason with them was just awful because he played a lot because Favre wasn't playing at all. And he was terrible. He was bouncing. It's just bad. I was like, man, this guy's terrible. I remember there was a game the second season, I think, where Favre got hurt. And he had to come in and play in the second half of a game and just was lighting it up. I was like, is that the same guy?
Yeah, sometimes it just clicks, right?
Turns out that Aaron Rodgers is pretty good.
He's not bad. I'm still on record. They got rid of the only wide receiver he trusts. They're winning 9 games this year. They're 9-8. I'm on record.
Wow. No, I was looking at their schedule. They've got 11 in them, I figure. 11-6.
Hmm.
They're going to have a top 5 good.
It better be.
Just watch.
That's why they gave up all those resources.
And honestly, though, even if they go 9-8, they're still winning the division.
Probably, that's fine.
But no, they're a double digit team. I don't think they're going to be home field advantage good because I do think that there's some question marks on. I mean, we were joking on the last show that their running backs might lead their team in receptions.
Yeah, that's your longtime assertion for this, since everything went down this offseason, and I'm not arguing with you on that at all.
Oh, I didn't taunt you on Twitter. But I almost sent you one of my I Told You shows, or the patented Nostra Thomas, or I Predict. Debo Samuel's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I did it again.
After all is said and done, he's not going anywhere.
That 2 for 2 now with my when the hot take is that the guy is staying, I'm 2 for 2.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing now, is to make it seem like in the media that you're just, oh, I'm through with it. I'm done with this organization.
Yeah.
They're done with me, and we're definitely breaking up. And then they throw in the big bag of cash. Oh, it's all good again. We all love each other.
If we had that crack production staff, I'd go back and find that tape from when we had that whole Debo discussion, and I was just like, he can't leave. He's useless everywhere else because all these other teams are going to want him to do what he's doing for the Niners. And he's saying, I don't want to do that. Well, then you're useless to us. We want that.
Right.
So now they pay him. And now he gets to keep doing what he was doing and being dangerous.
Right.
So
that's why you give him that much money, because he's doing that. So I don't think he's going
to
be...
He wasn't leading the team in rushing, but he's just so dangerous in special teams, receiving, and running. He's just that all-purpose guy. He's probably the most all-purpose guy we've had since Marshall Faulk.
That's quite lofty praise. Yeah, he wasn't their leading running back. He was just their best running back on the team, that's all.
Well, I don't think he led the team in rushing.
That's what I just said. He wasn't their leading rusher. He was just the best running back on the team.
Right. Correct. Like Cordero Patterson, the poor man's Debo Samuel. No, I'm not saying he's as good as Marshall Faulk was. I'm just saying that he did something that we hadn't seen since Marshall Faulk.
I understand. That's quite the name to bring up.
Because Marshall Faulk is his own level. But did Marshall Faulk have 1,000 yards rushing and receiving 1 year?
He might have.
Because that sounds right,
stupid.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, he had some stupid combination of all-purpose yardage, rushing and receiving. Yeah, he was something else.
No, Marshall Faulk was ridiculous, and he's in the Hall of Fame, as he should be.
Yes.
And he deserves it. Debo's been – he's new to this, so he keeps this up. But it's so hard to keep up because I could – doing it in a running back's body, I think, is easier than doing this in a wide receiver's body.
Hmm. He wouldn't be nearly as effective as a receiver in a running back's body, though.
Faulk was a runner first, but nobody ran that wheel route better than Marshall Faulk.
Right. But he ran other routes, too. He was slanting over the middle.
Yeah, he'd catch on the backfield. Yeah, he'd run the wheel route. He'd do that up the sideline one. I mean, come out of the backfield and then that go route. And then, just see it right now. Close your eyes. There's Kurt Warner just dropping that in there for a 60-some-odd yard touchdown. And almost unstoppable. And Debo, he was that last year.
Yep, different body type completely. His value is going up and mossing you and just taking the ball from you. Like, you can't do anything about it.
He keeps the Niners least relevant. Now, I'm not going to go out and say that they're going to be good, but he'll keep them in the game. He'll keep them in games.
No, he's Shohei. He's doing everything you could possibly ask him to do.
Yeah.
The team might suck, might not, despite what he's doing, but he's still going to do what he's doing. And that's what his value is basically doing anything they ask him to do.
You know, we talked about this last week when we were joking about the Hall of Infamy for baseball, when I was talking about the first slight, like we were talking about the first guy who got traded for himself, and it's only happened 4 times. Now, baseball is that weird sport for how long it's been going. Still, all the time, you'll hear about, this has never happened before. Did you see that there was one today?
Did I? I might have seen
the
it
Angels.
And forgot already.
The Angels today became the first team ever in baseball to hit 7 home runs, all solo home runs in a game. But not only that, to lose.
I did see that. First team to ever hit 7 homers in a game and lose.
First team to ever hit 7 home runs in a game and lose, and also the first team to ever hit 7 solo home runs in a game.
You keep watching long enough, you see Stuff you never
so
seen.
That was, I'm pretty sure that's two firsts ever in a game.
Yeah.
And they still lost.
And they still lost.
Yeah.
That's the Angels, man.
Shohei,
that, no matter what
pops
they
up the shortstop on the first pitch he sees to end the game.
They could have Trout and Shohei and
man.
Griffey Jr. in his prime and A-Rod in his prime and Barry Bonds, and they would still find a way to lose. The Angels just lose.
Not high on the Angels. I haven't. I mean, I call it a sideshow. I mean, he might be the best talent and best player in the game.
Got their manager fired.
Yeah. Well, Joe Maddon had to go. But they're not doing any better since Joe got fired. And Trout's hurt again. I thought they were going to trade Shohei. I thought they should have.
Ooh, I didn't think they were ever going to. There were rumors, I know, with the trade deadline and half the league got traded. But he didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could have done that.
I will tell you what's weird for our fantasy team. Nobody got traded out of our league. We had two guys that got traded in the league, which is just so rare that we actually that Benintendi went to the Yankees, and then Trey Mancini went to the Astros. Nobody on our team got traded out to the NL this year. I'm just sitting here like, oh, what? We've actually been up as high as third place recently.
Huh.
So
making our late run.
It's not all not all gloom and doom.
Well, that makes up for all those years where we've had like half the fucking team get traded to the National League.
So. Oh yeah, that was my first season. Oh my god.
Yeah, we've been decimated by that before, so we were due.
We were. We've also, knock on wood, been relatively healthy this season. Relatively.
It's tough. There's not much you can do about it. I've told you about my fantasy team and my health issues. We get four IL spots in that Yahoo League, and, man, I swear, my IL spots have been filled all year, and they're filled damn now.
What you told me about that was just absolutely crazy. And what we've also benefited from is guys who were just really bad are actually starting to play good baseball.
Right.
Like Marcus Semien. Turned out he's really not a 178 hitter.
Yeah, I had Semien on my team, and so I've experienced the same turnaround. I think the last time I talked about my team, I was 10th. I was probably right before the All-Star break. Now I think I'm 5th.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make my late push too. I got that whip out, trying to get that damn horse to go and give me something, man. Keep going. So yeah, it's going to be a better finish than I thought as well in my league. But I've still got injury issues. I'm still got my IL spots all filled in. Jazz Chisholm just decided to like break a bone in his neck or something, and so he's probably not playing the rest of the year. I talked about Jack Flaherty and taking a gamble on that pick, and he wound up pitching three innings and going right back on the injured list. So yeah, it's been tough, but you gotta do what you gotta do. But yeah, same as you, the resurgence is because of guys that had shit first halves actually turning it around and playing much better in the second half.
So that's
and I picked
me,
up
I...
Carpenter with you.
Oh no, and you didn't kill him.
Not yet.
He's got 15 bombs
and hitting three something, which is what I really needed even more than the homers was somebody to fucking hit more than 230.
322 with 15 bombs in 115 at bats.
That'll play.
That's Barry Bonds.
Or John Dowd. Why do I remember that?
Man, John Dowd. Oh God. that was one of the baseball. Was that MLB?
That was MVP.
MVP, yeah. And he was white and right-handed.
Right. So that there's no way that could be a Barry Bonds clone. He's white and he's right-handed.
Right.
He's
so
nothing
you just
like
go
Barry
to the
Bonds.
Player editor and make him black and left-handed and change his name to Barry Bonds. And what was even funnier was the name was programmed into the game. So did you know that?
Yeah, we would play... John Dowd would step up, and all of a sudden you'd hear, and here's Bonds. And I'm like, wait a minute.
No. If you changed his name to Bonds, the announcers would say it.
That's what I meant, was that the announcers
right.
would
so
say
they,
Bonds.
They obviously,
but you had to go in and
recorded the audio.
Bonds.
Right. They obviously recorded the audio and then let you get that, which I just that's funny to me.
That could not have been an accident. That's an Easter egg that they put in there on purpose. You know, that,
yeah,
those,
like they
those
knew,
programmers.
They knew what people were going to do.
Yeah.
Like everybody's going to get the game. Everybody's going to get the game, and they're going to go in there, and they're going to change it, right? They're going to put Barry Bonds in the game. So let's just record the name Bonds.
Yeah, MVP 05 for PlayStation 2. The Giants left fielder was a white guy named John Dowd, who was right-handed and had
all the physical
characteristics
all the,
of Barry Bonds.
He would. He'd mash the ball. He'd hit the ball 500 feet. He was Barry Bonds.
Yeah. Power was 99, and his speed was 92 and all that. Yeah, it was Barry Bonds, basically.
That's funny. Just the fact that you remember that.
Yeah, just out of nowhere. John Dowd, the stand-in for the doppelganger for Barry Bonds, because Bonds wouldn't give up his licensing rights to the video games. There's several guys who that happened with. Michael Jordan on those NBA games would not give up his license, so the Bulls had a player named number 99 who could do nothing wrong, just was the most awesome athlete you've ever seen, and also happened to have a shaved head. But that wasn't Michael Jordan. And I'm sure there's plenty of other examples as well. Yeah, those licensing deals, they're interesting. Some of those, I guess, when you get to that level of superstar where you say, you know what, all these other Hammond Heggers in this locker room that are happy to be on these video games, I'm above them. I deserve better. I'm going to hold out, and you cannot use my license, or my likeness, rather, until you properly, I guess, compensate me more than
kiss
all these
the
other
ring.
Guys.
You got to kiss the ring. Jordan had no problem having his likeness used because we had all those Jordan Bird and was it Magic and what was Magic and Bird, the one-on-one basketball games that were
Jordan had a game as well. You're right.
Yeah, yeah, Jordan and Bird, and it was just one-on-one basketball, you against Larry Bird.
Right.
That's when video games were so simple. Now, oh my God, last time I tried to play like an NBA 2K type game, I was like, I can't do this. I'm not hitting a 7-button combo to dunk the ball. Like I'm playing Mortal Kombat.
Finish him. Yeah. That's, you get to that level.
Dunk the ball, fatality.
After a while, these video games, they make it more and more complicated to the point where I guess we kind of age out. We're like, nope, not for us. Can't do it.
That's how I felt about those MLB The Show games. Yeah. Because I was like, I might have a better chance of hitting an actual MLB pitcher than hitting some of these things.
Can't do it. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you got to figure out which what location, what quadrant of the plate is the pitch is coming in, and then you got to guess what pitch is actually coming and the velocity.
The shit just comes in filthy as hell, and you can never judge anything below the knees because it doesn't give you any concept that the ball's going to be low. So you think you take it, and it's at the knees. You're like, oh, come on.
Right.
And then you swing, and it's bouncing in the dirt.
Yeah, very, very frustrating. I haven't tried to play a baseball game in a long time either, and it probably would not go well at all. So, you know,
does that mean you're retired from all of your
Even your
Bears are retired?
Even Baron Armstrong and my Bears, yeah.
I've got the whatever Xbox Game Pass on my computer because I've got a cheap Xbox down here my daughter plays on, so I've got the Game Pass thing, so for free I could download if I wanted to and play the most recent Madden but not the newest Madden. I've thought about just downloading it to check it out.
Madden's
always just
going
to be Madden. That's the one thing you can always just be guaranteed about Madden is you'll always know how to play Madden.
Well, unless you trained on Madden 03 for 20 years like I did and did the franchise mode, because the Madden you sent me when you bought me the PS4, it was different. There were different things you had to, you know, the speed button was completely different. There were other buttons that were completely different. So they do change them up.
The super secret turbo button.
Right. It was even more secret because it was a different button now. So it does change. And, all the different ways you could throw the ball with all the, with the touch and with the zip and with the, and they added some things to that too, like you could, you know, loft it in between zone coverage and stuff like that. And I would be able to learn it if I sat down and trained on it, but I just don't have that kind of time now with the, you know, the job and the wife and all that.
Yeah, that I get.
And you get it more than me because you got the kids and that whole thing. So
yeah, probably the next time I play one of those types of games will probably be when they're old enough to start playing those games.
Yeah, and then they can get the joy of beating old dad at those games.
Oh, that would be so frustrating.
Dad, you're slow. Back in my day.
Yeah. Controllers had two buttons. I remember controllers were one button. The old Atari.
Where's the joystick on this thing?
Oh, man.
Well, I think that's going to be about it for us this evening.
I think I'm good. You got going to your wife's uncle's this weekend?
I thought we were going to all the way up to when my wife came home tonight and said we don't have to. So that's one of those situations where if there's family members that are able to come in for the weekend, then they let my wife know. And
so you're sort of on standby.
Yeah, we did it for like three or four weekends in a row the month before. And then there were a couple weekends where we were able to not do it. And then, of course, there was those couple weekends that we were gone. We were on our vacation. Since we've come back, there's been the last two weekends in a row where I thought we were going to. And then she got the call and said, no, you don't have to. We got this weekend. Because the weekend before we went on vacation, we actually went over there that Friday. Where we were, you know, when we were flying out on Sunday in the wee hours of the morning, we actually went to his house Friday and we're going to do Friday night. But then we let them know we wouldn't be able to do Saturday night because we were flying Sunday morning at 4 a.m. or whatever. So we get there that Friday night and we didn't know his daughter had flew in from Seattle and was there with a friend, and they were, they already had food and we're going to be staying that whole weekend. And his daughter was on the phone, you know, with somebody talking about, hey, you going to bring the drinks? And so they were about to have a good time. And my wife was like, okay, we'll be going now because this is obviously taken care of with you guys. And it would just be, you know, too many people at that point if we stayed and tried to shoehorn our way in as well. So my wife actually made that decision to, you know, because I, you know, had all my stuff and brought all my, you know, I went to work and then I drove and I came home and I got a suitcase and I got all the stuff that I would need for one night and drove all the way out there to his house and picked up dinner and whatnot. And then it got there and saw all these cars in the driveway. And I'm like, who's here? What's going on?
Oh, wow.
And walked in and saw them. And my mind, because I did all this stuff, I didn't even consider, would it be too many people in the house? In my mind, I'm just thinking, I got all my stuff. My wife got all her stuff. We're here. We got all our stuff. I was like, where are we going to sleep now? What, you know, which bedroom are we going to take and which one are they going to take? Because I was, you know, completely zoned in on we're here and we said we were going to be here, so we're just going to stay. And my wife is the one who made the decision. No, that would not be good. There's too many people here. We're going to actually leave. And so we got all our stuff and went right back home, which is the smart thing to do. Again, this is why I married her, because she makes the decisions that I would not. I was just completely, you know, 100% headstrong into, okay, we're here. We're going to stay here this evening. And it wouldn't have gone well, because like I said, she had people coming and they had drinks and it was probably going to be a big party. It's great that he's got family members that are able to come and pitch in, because when he first went into the hospital, it wasn't looking too good as far as that goes. So that's why we got into that habit of being the ones to get over there, because he was relying on the woman that was staying there with him actually when he when she found him on the floor in his bedroom, which was his daughter-in-law's, one of his daughter-in-law's sisters was staying with him because he was already having some issues. But then there was one morning where she, you know, went into his bedroom and he was on the floor, and that's when she had to call the ambulance, and as you know, his heart stopped and they had to put a pacemaker in and all that stuff. And after that, it was, she basically was like, okay, I can't do this full time like that. Cause she was kind of being his caretaker. But that's not, you know, when somebody just comes out of the hospital after being, you know, a week in the hospital, and needing all the physical therapy that he needs from getting back on his feet from being out for that long, she couldn't handle all that. And that's when my wife and I, you know, okay, we'll go over there on the weekends, and you know, she'll be there during most of the week. And there's days when she's not able to do in the middle of the week as well, and that's when my wife goes over there by herself. But on the weekends, the plan was me and my wife, unless there's others that are able to step in, and that's where we stand. The last couple of weekends, there's been others that have been ready to step in. So that's
well,
how
we'll
that goes.
We'll play it by ear as we get in here to the football season, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is, there's going to be times when, we're going to be over there for the entire weekend, Friday and Saturday night, which means that
right.
We discussed this a little bit on the last.
Yeah, like I'll just run the board and you can call in.
I'll have to call in on the phone because I can't use his Wi-Fi to be on the show on the computer because his Wi-Fi is kind of weak. So,
well, no, that would be bad then. So, we'll do that. You know, like, you know, family comes first, and we'll work with it. How many times have we changed things on here for family things or whatnot? We're flexible and. One last thing, because we're going through here with Hall of Infamy stuff.
Yep.
And today, for baseball, is a happy anniversary for Hall of Infamy member Robin Ventura.
Yeah, I definitely saw that.
Happy anniversary. 29 years ago, I believe, one shy of 30, that Robin Ventura got his ass beat by a 46-year-old man. So congratulations, Robin Ventura.
And despite that being a White Sox member, that was your induction because it was a low light for a White Sox member, which means you took great joy in doing
that. I'm looking at the list here. I'm on the master list. 2017 was our inaugural year. So believe it or not, think about that. We've been doing baseball now. This was our sixth time.
Already.
Doing a 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 six times we've already done baseball. It doesn't feel like we've done that many, but that maybe that's
well we haven't compared to football.
No, nothing compared to football, but yeah, our sixth go around doing, but we both did five the first year for baseball, and I got, that was my inaugural season. I got Robin Ventura in.
And for getting noogied.
Yeah, looking at it, I've had a few White Sox high points here.
Yes, you're the one to put the Laguiz in.
The Laguiz twins, the not twins, but that's another father-son. I'm good with my father-son combos. Yeah, the Laguiz, and then I also had Disco Demolition Night that same year.
God, another low light in White Sox. You love low lights in White Sox history.
Hey, I've trashed the Cubs, too. Don't worry.
You put Brant Brown in. I figured
that
one belongs to you.
And the black hat.
That's right.
For the 69 collapse.
Yeah, I'm not aware of like 1960s NFL happenings that are infamous like the black cat thing. So I can't go
like
back
murder.
Like that. Well. I would have to like sit down at and Google and look up 50s and 60s and 70s infamous happenings in the NFL to put some of those in because they don't pop out, you know, in my mind.
About the lore, like the lore of baseball is so much longer For most people, the lore of the NFL is the Super Bowl era.
True, and then even before that, it's just basically, oh well, this championship game was the greatest playoff game in history.
It's bits and pieces, right?
Right.
It's not, you know, or a player, like people who like who just know their history, you know, like oh, Red Grange, you know, or like okay, like, you know your Bears history, Sid Luckman.
All right, I don't know anything about Decatur. Sorry.
Right. You know, you just know these things. Well, everybody knows Sid Luckman because he's the Bears' all-time leading passer up until Jay Cutler.
Right.
So that's why you know. So the guy from the 40s was still their all-time leading passer. Up until less than a decade ago.
They'll catch up to the 21st century one of these days. They're working
someday,
on it.
Someday. So, yeah, NFL preview will be about a month away, a little over.
That's right.
Season kicks off on the 8th, I want to say. I know the first Sunday of baseball is on 9/11.
Right.
Yeah, well, September 8th is the first Thursday night.
Well, so you know to gird yourself and get ready because you know what that Sunday is going to entail. A lot of flags. A lot of injuries. Well, of course. A lot of Air Force shows over stadiums. A lot of flyovers.
Points of emphasis.
Right. Whatever. New rules. Point of emphasis. Lots of really bad play because, like you said, it's basically preseason week 4.
You know, and I do still have my Sling TV, and I do get NFL Network on there, so I've got a sense if I'm at work and it's really slow, because NFL Network will just play all those preseason games. That's
right.
Probably how I'm going to watch most of my preseason is just going to be on delays.
Yeah, if I watch it at all, that's how I watch it. It's just
can't
sleep. 1 in the morning. They're showing the Steelers-Jaguars game that they played a few days ago. Let me check that out a little bit.
Isn't that who's playing tonight?
No, tonight is Jaguars-Raiders.
Jaguars, okay. Oh, even better. So I'm actually, the way my work schedule is going to end up lining up, I'm probably going to be off those 2 days leading up to that. So I'll probably be off on that Tuesday and Wednesday. So we'll be able to do our preview either one of those days.
Excellent.
We can take it right up to kickoff almost.
The only question that we wind up having is do we do one whole enchilada, big 2-hour live show, the whole thing, or do we split it up into two nights?
We've done it both ways. If I end up truly having both of those nights off, maybe, and I'll think about it, maybe it makes more sense to split it up just because we always give the short shrift to whoever goes last.
This is true.
You know, and we're doing the last two divisions in 12 minutes.
Right. Either way.
Because we have to, because we'll get into some argument about something awful that shouldn't be argued about.
You think they're going to finish third? I think they're going to finish fourth.
Right.
You're crazy.
I remember one year it was like we're talking about the Miami Dolphins and they were just absolute trash for 20 minutes.
Right.
So it might be better that way, or we just schedule an extravaganza and try, ha ha ha, to stay on the script.
Yeah, I just thought about it. I think the reason we went for the big ball is because I think back when I started in the bowling league.
Oh, right.
Wednesdays became, you know, off limits basically. And
right.
I might be starting back this year. I haven't decided.
Honestly, I can do it either way. I think we have become more aware of time as we've aged.
You would think we've become more aware, but boy, we still get to the toward the end of shows, and we're like, we got to fit in all these other things, and we got 90 seconds.
Just like when we do our pick, when we do that pick
right.
for that game on Thursday night, on whatever day we do our preview, we're going to do that pick in the last 90 seconds of the show.
And I'm laughing because every show I say to myself, okay, 5 minutes before the show ends, let me start breaking down and getting into this pig, and then it winds up not working out that way. Cause,
and that was back when we did recaps, which we don't do a recap show anymore. You know, unless something is just amazing we have to talk about, which has been very rarely. Or was it last year? Last year, did we actually do a Triple Gobble show? I think we did.
One of the last couple of years we didn't because I got sick.
Oh, well, that makes sense. So, yeah, I'm excited. So, yeah, I'm probably figuring we'll throw one more regular summer show up here between now and the start of football, and then we've got a football preview, and then back to business.
And then another week we did a recap show just because I was on vacation. We didn't have a real show the week before.
Was that the week I did the show at my kids?
Yeah, I believe so. The hostile takeover.
That was the hostile takeover. That was a wild show.
that was a thing. That was an event. So yeah, that's what we are setting up for as we get ready to start another year, our 10th year of the podcast, getting ready to start it, only a month away.
All right. Well, we managed to stretch this whole thing out to 2 hours.
We did. And I still intend to get a hold of Renard and make that last show in between now and the beginning of the season, a season preview with Renard and Kaz if she's available. So I slacked off in communicating with them, so I have to get back on that.
I'm thinking that, if we're going to schedule it, I'd like to do it after the 19th, because that's when I want to come back with my report on my family trip to the game. So that's football related. So,
okay.
Like the 23rd, that's a Tuesday night, would probably be the show to do.
All right. I will let them know.
So that's what I'd say would be good, because we can't do the 22nd. That's my son's birthday. Won't be doing a show that night. But the 23rd, I'm home, and that's going to be right after. So we have to, after that game we go to on that Friday night. So that'll be still kind of fresh in our minds. And I think that'll be fun to come back and give a report on that. I might even get some participation.
Ah, looking forward to some cute factor. Okay,
that's right. Talking about their experience at Lambeau Field.
All right, yeah, we've pretty much stretched it all the way out, so I guess we can finally call it a night.
I'm done. Turn it off the mic.
Those of you that have listened this far, you must be real fans, and I appreciate you, and send us a note sometime. Those of you who do listen, nobody communicates, so I'd love to hear what you have to say about the show or about anything, so... InMuchLessDetail@gmail.com. Again, that's our email address. I'm on Twitter at @IMLDDre. Jason is on Twitter at @IMLDJTG. And again, our blog, InMuchLessDetail.blogspot.com. That's where you can read tonight's Football Hall of Infamy inductions. And that's where you go to keep up with our picks when the actual season starts and we get back to making football picks. It's coming. Football season is just around the corner. The exhibition season started tonight, and that's something I don't really pay any attention to, but some of you miss football that much that you did, and good for you. Our next show we're aiming for, Jason wants the 23rd on a Tuesday, and I will let Renard know, and we'll see if we can get Renard from Football Fan Rush Radio on the show and do a little season preview with him. All right, I'm finally out of words. He is Jay, I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. IMLD's Football Hall of Infamy, Class of 22, extra dark, extra dank. I warned you it was going to be gruesome and icky and violent, and that's what it was, and then some. Hopefully it was entertaining to all of you. We are aiming to be back August the 23rd, or somewhere around there. And we will talk to you somewhere around then.